As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show.
European edition. Today, there's the decisive Inter-Juventus and the countdown to Bayern, and the pretty indecisive Kylian Mbappe, who, oh look, says he's going to Real Madrid again. We round it all up, hail a massive Hakan, who ironically Inter didn't have to cough up for, ponder top four races across Europe, why Gareth went to Jordan, and the latest El Derby in Madrid, and more in this Totally Football Show. Tuesday, the 6th of February. I'm here listening with you and James Horncastle. All right, James.
Hello.
Alvaro Romeo's also here.
Hola, James.
Hola. And Raphael Honigstein, slightly confused Raphael Honigstein. It was a coughing reference.
What
coughing.
Am I confused about this time?
The Hakan cough.
Right, up. Yes. Yeah. Not a term I'm familiar with.
No. Where's Jules? Where's Julien Laurens?
Is he moving with Mbappe to Madrid?
I don't know. We'll ask him later on. If Mbappe does move to Madrid, there's months before, you know, that actually becomes a reality. We'll see.
Wow.
He's got things, but he will be joining us a little bit later on.
He's got things, eh?
He's got things.
Look at him. Go, Jules.
How are your things, Alvaro?
Is there a treatment?
My things are very well. I was thinking about Kylian Mbappe. Based on what was reported in Spain 2 years ago, Kylian Mbappe has already like 5 or 6 properties he's going to move to in Madrid.
Really?
Yeah.
What, all of them?
I'm being sarcastic here.
Oh,
by
I see.
By the way,
okay.
Because there was this headline, no, Kylian Mbappe has already chosen a property to live in. Mm-hmm. That must mean that he's playing for Real Madrid the next season. That
Absolutely.
Was reported in 2022.
Right.
So get ready to more reporting like this.
Yeah, indeed so. Hey, let's have some moments of the weekend. Who wants to start? Not Rafa, James.
I'm going to start with a skill of the weekend, James, and it will be Hakan Çalhanoğlu's pass in the first half of the Derby d'Italia from sort of an inside right position, inside his own half, just a big diagonal, low hit pass to release Di Marco behind the Juventus defence. Di Marco cut back, and then another great skill, really, because you see Bremer managed to stop Thuram from having a tap-in. But the pass from Çalhanoğlu, magnificent.
There's an angle from behind him where you really see the Tom Brady-esque qualities of that ball in what many are hailing as his best ever Inter performance.
Yeah, although he's had a few. I mean, he played a similar, incredible reverse pass against Atalanta, I think, earlier this season. But like his reinvention as a number six regista has been just one of the great tactical novelties of not just Italian football, but European football over the last few, last 18 months. And he was roundly laughed at for saying that he considers himself to be one of the top 5 midfield players in the world when he said this, I think before the Champions League final. But the way he's playing at the moment, it's hard to dispute, James. Hard to dispute.
Maybe it's a bigger topic than we've got time for now, but would you liken his drop back to that regista role in the great Italian tradition of Fellini and Pasolini and Massimo De Sica?
The actual film directors,
Would you liken that to the day that Carlo Mancini and then later Ancelotti went, oh, Pirlo would make a lot of sense further back.
Well, it's happened later in his career, and you could say it was probably by accident rather than design, because Marcelo Brozovic was out injured for a long period of last season. So Inzaghi had to reinvent Calhanoglu. But certainly on the late night shows in Italy on Sunday, people were comparing him to Xabi Alonso and to Seba Veron as well. And to be honest, that pass is very Veron as well. But yeah, delightful, as is that midfield, as is that entire Inter team.
Yeah. You know,
I keep hyping them up, the one-man hype man, but they are a great team, proper team.
Proper team.
Champions League favourites, some people are saying.
Avaro.
I have a moment of the weekend. It's a very good one. It happened on Monday, by the way. But it happened at Vallecas, and many weird things happens at Vallecas. We'll talk about that a little bit later, because Lucas Ocampos can say a couple of things about what happened to him.
Right.
But I want to obviously focus on the football, and En-Nesyri is back after being in the African Cup of Nations to help Sevilla, because Sevilla is enduring a very complicated situation right now, and the season has been very difficult for them. And En-Nesyri came back from the Morocco camp, and he scored a couple of goals for Sevilla. They won away, and the kiss brace was so important for Sevilla to regain at least a little bit of form. And you can think, or you can expect, Sevilla being much better with a player like Youssef En-Nesyri. A brace for him, and a good night for Sevilla.
All right, Sevilla moving away from the bottom, unlike the fan's finger with Ocampos.
Exactly. Do you want to talk about that now?
Yeah. No. We'll save that treat for later. Rafa!
I think Bundesliga 2 provided the moment of the week. And it had to do with tennis balls, James. In the big game between Hertha and Hamburg, two teams that really are desperate to going back up, but Hertha looked like destined to stay down for another season, the game was interrupted for 30 minutes because Hertha fans kept chucking tennis balls onto the pitch in protest.
Staggered, no? They'd throw a few.
They stretched it out. And some had those, had that contraption that people use.
Tennis racket?
No. Oh. That people use
to throw
in
the
parks
dog.
With the dogs. Get even more range.
Great.
Nice.
Yeah, so they came well prepared.
Came correct.
It took 32 minutes to sort out, and in the end, Hamburg won.
Really? The tennis match, massive, or?
The football game, which was a massive win, because Hamburg in second looked like they might actually do it after all these years. But this is until next week's meltdown, when they managed to lose somehow at home again. But yeah, that was a big game. And we should say the protest were against the Bundesliga's investment plans that we talked about on this pod.
Not 777.
Not 777, although maybe some protests are incoming regarding them. They own the minority share in Hertha. But yeah, interesting stuff.
Do Hamburg, they used to have this clock that would count down until, well, not countdown. It was how long they'd been in the Bundesliga. Mm. Do they have one for how long they've been in Bundesliga's?
No. The clock's been retired.
It's a shame.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Okay. Loads to talk about from the Bundesliga. Ein. And from La Liga and Serie A. And of course from
Eins,
Jules.
Really.
Eins. Okay. And from Jules with his Ligue 1 news. Woof. That'll be later on. But we're going to begin at San Siro Sunday night.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Al centrocampista in Italia, linea di rigore, prova la sforbicia davanti, rete, ha segnato l'Inter, esattamente al minuto 36, nel corso del primo tempo, cambia il parziale a San Siro.
Sunday night at San Siro, spectacular pre-game choreography from the Inter Ultras, Medusa's head with the snakes are writhing.
Yeah,
not the only strangely coiffed figure in the stands at San Siro. There was also James Horncastle.
Yep, that was right, James. It's a great atmosphere.
Yep.
I mean, San Siro over the last year has been a magnificent place to visit. You know, you think of the Champions League semi-finals, which were Derby della Madonnina. And this one, it kind of took it by surprise walking to the stadium, because it had been billed as this title decider, even though there were still 15, or in Inter's case, 16 games to go. But 2 hours before kickoff, you really got the kind of scale of how important this was. There were clashes outside the ground, like even just getting to the eighth gate where the journalists go in. It was very difficult at first because they kind of closed off a bit for crowd control reasons. But yeah, sort of 2 hours beforehand, there were fans, particularly away fans for Juventus, already in the stands. And you could hear from, like, I'd say like a kilometre away, chants, not just from fans walking to the game, but from within San Siro. So it was a great atmosphere. And also, like, this laser show that they had before the Medusa, James, was pretty spectacular. The Medusa thing from side on, you couldn't really make out what it was.
Good on the telly, though.
It apparently looked amazing on the telly. And, like, there was some, like, AI-generated photo which they had based the Medusa on.
Okay.
Because Inter's spirit animal is the basilisk, isn't it?
The snake.
The snake. So that's why they kind of went for... And there was a pre-choreography, an aperitivo choreography, if you like, which was all of the kind of alleged crimes Juventus have committed over the years.
Do you need alleged on those? Do you?
Well, some of them I looked at and thought...
How long did that choreography...
Well, I'd say there were maybe 10 different banners. So it was pretty spectacular. And I think even the game lived up to it, or Inter's performance certainly lived up to it.
Well, it was the big decider. Who is Sinner and who is Djokovic?
Yeah.
So Inter are the flame-haired champions.
Carlos Alcaraz came on in this game. Juventus' new loan signing from Southampton. But yeah.
Decided by an own goal by the unfortunate Gatti again.
Yes.
Yes. But Szczesny was immense. Inter completely dominated the game.
I'd say so. I mean, after 20 minutes, they had 80% of the ball. And you did wonder, is this part of Juventus' calculus? Are they thinking, right, let's come away from here with just a point? We've only got three games for the rest of February, and they're against Udinese, Frosinone, another team down the bottom, maybe Verona. Whereas Inter have to play five times. They play Roma next, revived under Daniele De Rossi, 4-0 winners on Monday night. They've also got their game in hand against Atalanta, and Atalanta are playing really well at the moment. And then they've got the Champions League game against Atletico. As well as Simone's got to face his brother, Pippo, Salernitana, which should be an easy win. But because it's before the Champions League game, does he rotate? If he rotates, does that put them at risk of dropping points? So you thought Juventus might have been thinking about, okay, let's just come away with it, point intact, and then just attack the three games that we've got in February and let Inter slip up. And I think Inter were more determined because they recognised that calculus and were like, we have to win this game. And they really put on, particularly in the second half, after their goal, when Juventus had to kind of, were forced to come out, Inter played some magnificent football. They should have been 3-0 winners, really.
Anyone else you want to cite alongside Calhanoglu, Pavard, for example,
Acerbi's? Pavard was fantastic. A lot of Inter fans very excited by him because he's had a good week, really. They won in Florence against Fiorentina, which was seen as a tricky game because they'd been playing in Saudi Arabia, the Super Cup, which expanded format, two games. A lot of expectation that Inter would be tired going into this difficult away game against a good Fiorentina side. They won it late, thanks to a goal from Lautaro, who's pretty anonymous in the actual Derby d'Italia. But Pavard saved the win against Fiorentina with a goal line clearance. And then he is ultimately fundamental to the breakthrough goal in the Derby d'Italia because he's a centre-back who ends up in the wrong penalty area, building up an Inter attack. It's his attempted bicycle kick which causes the kind of confusion that leads to Gatti's own goal. And so Inter just very fluid. Lots of really interesting positional changes. You know, Di Marco playing as a left wing back, but popping up on the right hand side or popping up in midfield. The centre backs really far forward, often as wingers with kind of two midfield players there to stop counter attacks. And that was what Inzaghi was very pleased with after the game. He was like, Juventus had one counter attack all game. Unfortunately, it fell to Vlahovic, who'd been in such great form, but really fluffed his touch. But Pavard was magnificent. And as you mentioned, James, Chesney, I mean, really kept Juventus in the game with two massive saves from Barella and Marco Arnautovic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Quite the... That was Chesney more than Arnautovic. But what a huge chance that was. Six wins out of six for Inter since the turn of the year. They are now 4 points clear of Juve with a game in hand. Çalhanoğlu, who they picked up on a free, they've been doing that again this week, haven't they? With Beppe Marotta doing Beppe Marotta things.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Or is that not confirmed yet, the Zielinski thing?
It is because Napoli, the champions, they've just decided that the coach, he shouldn't be doing pre-game press conferences anymore because they think he gives too much away tactically, which anyone who's seen Mazzarri's teams play, I mean, there's not much to learn, really. But De Laurentiis has just been doing press conferences. And so, yeah, he came out and said, yeah, Zielinski's not on the list in our Champions League squad, which for me is remarkable, really. You know, he's got 4 months. He's a professional. He'd be a difference maker against a team like Barcelona. Not in the Champions League squad. And then he was asked why. And he was like, well, because he's not going to be at the club next season.
And vindictive.
Inter, you know, sort of very, as they are, like sort of, no, we've got nothing to do with this. We'll let Zielinski take his decision and all that sort of thing. But it's very clear that Zielinski will be playing for Inter, I would say, next season. But where does he get into this fantastic midfield? Because it's, I mean, they've signed one of the best young Italian midfield players, Davide Fratesi. Barely gets a look in. When he does score, but barely gets a look in. So yeah, Inter very much operating on freeze, as they've had to because of the straitened circumstances in which their owner finds himself. But I mean, that was another big talking point because Juventus have tried to make themselves out all season as this little plucky underdog who's only interested in qualifying for the Champions League. And if that means they finish fourth, they finish fourth. Everything else is a bonus. And that's really kind of got under Inter's skin. It's like, you're in a title race. Yeah, don't try and make this out to be something that it's not. Don't try to make yourself out to be this little poor Juventus when Juventus...
But they're prickly, Inter, aren't they?
Prickly. And that's what Allegri said. And there was a table that Transfermarkt put out after this game, which showed, I think, of the cumulative value of the squads and Juventus in terms of the transfer fees paid. And Juventus were by far the top. And Juventus and Inter were like maybe fifth, sixth.
Where were Roma in there?
Just behind Inter.
Oh, really?
Okay. Because Roma have had to do free transfers and loans over the last few years. But so again, that was something that Interisti were sort of gloating about.
All right.
And rightly so.
Well, as you mentioned, big period coming up for the Nerazzurri, featuring Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. Atletico Madrid, Alvaro, who had a huge game themselves this weekend, the derby, the third Madrid derby in, what, 3 weeks, is it?
Three, 4 weeks.
Yeah, the Super Cup, which they lost, the Copa del Rey, which they won, and this one?
Which they drew.
Ahí va Xavi, Memphis, Llorente remata, gol. Gol, 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 de Marco Llorente. Indecisión de la defensa del Madrid y Marco Llorente que viene desde el cielo saltando la dos de cabeza.
You know, sometimes when a team scores a goal in the aggregate just to snatch 2 points from their biggest rival, the feeling they get is this is like a victory. But in reality, we check the big picture. This is not by any means a positive result for Atletico de Madrid. It's just all right. But Atletico are virtually out of the title race. Had they beaten Real Madrid, they would be 6 points away, and I think that they would have had a shot at the title. But right now, being 10 points away from Real Madrid, you can really say that they won't be fighting for La Liga title. But and on top of that, I think that they could have won this game because Real Madrid didn't have any healthy or fit centre-back for this game, apart from Nacho. Carvajal had to play as a centre-back, and Carvajal, it's 173 in meters, which is basically as tall as I am. I mean, and he was playing there against the likes of Alvaro Morata, for example, and Atletico should have capitalised on that way more, and I think that the aerial power that Atletico had inflicted not only one goal to Real Madrid, the goal by Marcos Llorente in the extra time of the second half, but Atletico had a goal disallowed after a corner kick, and they had a really couple of good chances, all of them via the aerial game in the first half. I think that it was a good game. There was a player who was, I think, that miles ahead of everyone else, Brahim Diaz, who was never going to start this game because Vinicius was in the lineup, but he felt a muscular issue around his neck area and he couldn't play the game. And then Brahim was running the show sometimes, not only because he had a contribution in the score sheet, but also because he did, in my opinion, the most spectacular action of the game, just nutmegging Hermoso and then leaving Witsel behind with a really nice feint. He should have scored, he didn't, but he's a little magician. And I think that his performance was good enough for Luis de la Fuente, the Spanish manager, to consider calling him in March, because I think that Brahim Diaz is a player who is very, very, very desirable for Morocco as well. He can play for both Morocco and Spain, and it would be obviously a great asset for Spain if he can play the Euro for us.
Okay.
Wow. No, I'm just, it's, you know, I often have a AC Milan hat on. For Çalhanoğlu to play as well as he...
Is that your favourite hat?
No, just like, you know, I have to think and focus about AC Milan a lot. So I do have to think and focus about Juventus and Inter a lot. But, like, it's very interesting to have Brahim, who is let go by Milan, having played as a number 10 there. And then Çalhanoğlu, again, player who's been let go, reinvented, and has been doing very well. To see them both go off and thrive at other big clubs, really, you know, it's perhaps doesn't necessarily reflect well on the work of Stefano Pioli.
Right. Right, was Real not always his parent club?
I can't remember whether Milan had an option or not. Right. But
there's always room for
the little man.
But Madrid was always monitoring Brahim. Okay. I mean, they signed him from Manchester City. They knew that he had the potential. Zinedine Zidane used him a little bit. And then the loan to Milan paid a lot of dividends. It was a very clever loan because, number one, Real Madrid and Milan, I don't think they have faced each other in the Champions League for a while, so Brahim didn't have to play against Real Madrid. And secondly, because Brahim became the player he is now. I think that he is now even better than when he started playing for Real Madrid. He feels more confident. At the beginning of the season, he didn't play a lot, but we have spoken about the fringe players of Real Madrid, those ones who have stepped up, and Brahim is one of them. Brahim, right now, is almost a candidate to start every game. I think that Ancelotti will at least think about it, and he will definitely put Brahim on the pitch in the second half of any important game. But what about Joselu? Real Madrid is where they are now, because in midweek, when Real Madrid had a game in hand, Joselu scored the brace against Getafe.
That game against Getafe also featured a pretty feisty moment between Jude Bellingham and Mason Greenwood with words said, which have drawn a lot of interest on
from lip readers. Lip readers, you know, really invoicing.
With that victory and the point on Sunday, Real are 2 points clear of Girona at the top of the table, who only drew 0-0 with Real Sociedad on Saturday. It was quite a lot of controversy here as well with that Girona goal that was ruled out.
Yeah, Girona got a goal, but the goal was cancelled. Angel Herrera scored with a header, but 36 seconds before the goal happened, all in the first half, there had been an offside that the referee didn't call. Then Girona kept on attacking. They tried to attack three times. Real Sociedad didn't regain the possession. They just cleared the ball. And at the end, Girona scored the goal. But as I said before, the goal was cancelled and Girona is fuming about it.
The reason, of course, that this has been getting so much play, so much traction, is because of what's going to happen next Saturday evening.
Yeah, because Madrid and Girona played. But in all fairness, I have to say that, for example, I believe that in Derby de Madrid, there was a penalty on Jude Bellingham that the referee didn't call.
Okay.
So that's why I'm saying that I think that the performance of the referee against Almeria at Bernabeu was very poor. Was very poor. But all the points that Real Madrid have this season, I think they have earned them. I mean, they are not the leaders of La Liga just because the referees are helping them. Another story is, as I said before, or as I said in previous shows, the pressure that Real Madrid in their previews of the games put on referees.
Right.
But I think that all the points that Real Madrid has are more or less fair.
Okay, huge game though next Saturday.
Yeah.
As the top two go up against it. And in the last few days, we're learning that Man City have signed one of the standout players for Girona,
Xavi. This,
yeah, the negotiations must have been tough for that deal.
Yeah, Alvaro. Really difficult. I mean, probably they don't speak to each other to start with. No, but Manchester City are getting a good player, yeah. A player that belonged to Troyes in France, but never actually made an impact there.
I don't think that he played. Club also owned by Man City.
Yeah, as you can see, there is an entanglement in there. But I think that Manchester City are getting a good player for themselves.
Okay.
Of course, he, in terms of his dribbling skills, you could compare him to Jeremy Doku, the Belgian footballer. I think that Savinho is a player who never dims down if he plays against a good team. He's always shining. He's always playing the games with the authority of a footballer who has the confidence to make a difference. And, you know, I think that it's a great signing, but right now he has to focus on Girona because I do believe that there is a genuine title race in La Liga. If Girona gets a result at Santiago Bernabeu, the title race is going to go on. The next game is going to be crucial for La Liga's future and La Liga's title race.
Okay, just 2 points between them. Later on, we'll be talking perhaps about the team who are close behind Atleti, and that's your Athletic Club de Bilbao, another big win at the weekend. But next up, let's hear about the Bundesliga, Rafa.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Tor für Bayer Leverkusen! Teller mit dem Doppelpack!
Big games next weekend in the Bundesliga. It's only Bayer Leverkusen, Bayern Munich, Saturday tea time at the Bayer Arena. Rafa, how are the two teams looking as they head into that big game?
Yeah, Leverkusen probably still looking better. Mm-hmm. They made very light work of Darmstadt. Darmstadt are the worst team in the league, and Leverkusen even rested one of their key players in Jeremy Frimpong, but they brought on Nathan Teller, and Nathan Teller scored two amazing goals in his starting debut. And that was enough for 3 points that they had always, I think, as part of the plan, if you will. Because they've been so consistent, it wasn't a surprise that Darmstadt couldn't really hurt them.
Formerly of Southampton, Nathan Teller. Has he been injured till now? Why is he not featured in the starting lineup until
Tell us more.
February?
no, it's because the wing-back system that Leverkusen play has been based on the back of the fantastic performances of Jeremy Frimpong and Alex Grimaldo. And there just hasn't been that much space for him.
Okay. A 2-0 win for them at Darmstadt. Bayern Munich, meanwhile, hosting Borussia Mönchengladbach and running out 3-1 winners. Did Harry Kane score? Yes, he did. That's now 24 goals, which is a record for a debut season, is it?
Yes, it is.
What's the record, Rafa? Lewandowski, 40 goals, did he score?
41.
41.
So not long to go to break that record. James, it was a sort of comical goal you see at Sunday League football or when big Premier League teams are involved. Goalkeeper dropped the ball and Kane just had to head it in.
Yeah.
It was a very, very simple finish for him. But two assists from Thomas Müller. Who was back in the starting lineup? A rare outing for him, and it was his 500th win.
Wow.
500 wins?
For Bayern.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a lot.
That's a lot
of wins. But he said he would have liked to have more. He would have liked to have more games as well.
In their histories.
Because he hasn't been starting a lot.
Yeah.
Under Tuchel, and he only really was given a chance because Jamal Musiala was needed out on the left with only Sané available as the the main winger. Although Brian Zaragoza has come in.
Is he the real Real? No. Okay. Yeah. Real Zaragoza. Terrible joke.
Yeah. Probably Brian Zaragoza is going to get more wins than Zaragoza themselves.
Okay.
I'm telling you.
He's been brought in to be the Messiah, of course, on the left wing.
Okay.
Heading out in the meantime is Alfonso Davies, who's picked up an injury. How serious is that?
It could have been worse. It's only a sprain on the ligament rather than a tear. And I think within a month or so, he'll be back. But it's not looking good for the Lazio games.
Misses the big game on Saturday. Before that match at the Bayer Arena, Bayer Leverkusen will be facing a Pokal quarterfinal against Stuttgart, who continue to be one of the revelations of this season, bucking their recent campaigns. Even without Gyurassy, they're still flying there in third.
Yeah, they had a great win away to Freiburg in the derby, Baden-Württemberg derby. Freiburg not quite as good this season, but still not a straightforward occasion. But Stuttgart scored very early, and Führich and Undav scoring again. Mm. Undav has already been told he'll be called up by Germany for the next games in March. Real chance for him to make himself part of this Germany team for the Euros, because we are very light on centre-forwards. Especially on centre-forwards who score goals.
Yeah,
so
13 in 17 for him.
Yeah, he's been in great form. But that quarter-final on Tuesday feels a little bit like the final, James, because A, it's first against third, so it is big in its own right. But also, the teams left in the competition, with the exception of Borussia Mönchengladbach, who are mid-table this year, are all Bundesliga 2 sides. So whoever wins this game on Tuesday night, going to be huge favourites to go all the way.
Crikey. Quick word on the race for fourth place. Stuttgart currently 3 points clear of Dortmund, who are now only 1 point clear of RB Leipzig after Leipzig got back into form with their victory over Union Berlin on Sunday. Dortmund, meantime, drawing a blank in their clash with Heidenheim, with Jadon Sancho on the bench because he's not got that much fitness left in him yet.
Yeah, they made a few changes, Sancho being rested, and the players who came in, like Thomas Meunier and Youssoufa Moukoko, criticised by Edin Terzic, said, today we gave an opportunity to one or two of the boys who don't get that much game time, and it was just not good enough from them.
Oh.
And Dortmund were poor. I think the absence of Reus and Brandt really hurt them. They played with two strikers, and it was all very static and predictable, and Heidenheim defended well and maybe could have even won the game. So after those three wins in a row, the positive momentum that Dortmund had been building up has come to a halt. And the opposite for Leipzig, because they had those three defeats, heavy defeats, and real pressure beginning to build on Marco Rose. But that win against Union puts them in a good position ahead, of course. And this is a game we haven't talked about much.
Mm.
A visit from Real Madrid next week.
Good Lord, that's next week already, isn't it?
It is next week.
Mm. Wow. We'll be previewing that in a special early Euro show. Should be with you Monday next week. Next up, let's have a quick word about Eredivisie before we touch on other matters.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase.
So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Big game in the Eredivisie last weekend. Ajax hosting PSV at the Johan Cruyff Arena. It finished 1-1. Steven Berghaus opening the scoring for the home side. Luke de Jong, about half hour in, equalising, and that's how it stayed. It means that PSV stay 10 points clear of Feyenoord, while Ajax are just goal difference behind AZ Alkmaar in the race for European spots. Ajax currently fifth. But the other news about this game was that Gareth Southgate went. And why did he go? To see Jordan Henderson, we imagine. Probably was. No?
Yeah, I would think so.
Amsterdam is always worth a visit.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a huge game. Anyway, Jordan Henderson was making his debut.
Jordan Henderson.
Do you want to do this entire section in a faux Dutch accent?
Yeah, Jordan. No, Jordan Henderson was making his debut for Ajax because he didn't have his work permit before.
I
imagine you know.
It's a shame.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, but he played 90 minutes.
There must have been so many shirts with his name in the stands.
I imagine.
I guess.
At the Jordan Henderson Arena.
Is it Jordan Henderson?
That sounded like Norwegian.
Yeah, Swedish.
But Gareth Southgate going does underline the fact that for all his recent detours on his career path, Henderson's very much in his thinking for next summer's Euros. Now, recently Jules spoke out.
It's unusual for him.
Yeah. He's not here, but I think he said quite enough last time. A lot of people were getting back in touch and saying, what do you say? Around Europe, is Jules' view that Henderson's a joke of a player shared at all?
I think there is no conversation in Spain about Jordan Henderson.
I think Alvaro has hit the nail on the head here.
But should I give my perspective?
Yes.
Honestly, I speak on behalf of my country now.
Yeah.
I think that Jordan Henderson is a very good footballer. He's been competitive. And I think that the fact that, and I want to see whether this is true or not, that his shirt has hit the record sales in Amsterdam is very weird to me. It's very weird to me because normally big stars get that, or players that actually...
What have they been smoking in Amsterdam?
That's a very good question. Or players that at least you get a hype about. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe Dusan Tadic 4 years ago could have been that player because he's really skillful. Jordan Henderson is just a very good industrious midfielder.
Okay. In this game, he did pop a couple of classic kind of Henderson balls over the back line, you know, that could have come to something.
Over the bar. Yeah.
I mean, he has scored good goals as well. I think that he's a good player of his generation.
Yeah.
But I don't know. He's not that mediatic.
Well,
what? Did Gareth South... He doesn't have a media profile, mediaticamente, did Gareth Southgate go and see any of his games for Al Etifak? That's like, was he one of the 500 people, 300 people in the stands? I'm just curious.
It's a very good question. To which I have no answer. Let's move on then. And hey, touch on Serie A again, because while the top three looks quite sorted.
Yeah.
Milan very comfortable there. Bit of a gap on either side of them in third spot. But behind them, the race for fourth place looks quite dramatic. You've got six teams within 5 points of each other, or four within four if you skip Lazio and Fiorentina, who you probably could get away with doing. So that's Atalanta, who beat Lazio this weekend 3-1, a brace from Charles de Ketelaere. A Roma, who got their third win in three under Daniele De Rossi, as you mentioned, 4-0 against Cagliari. Bologna, who won the derby with Sassuolo, 4-2. A thunderbolt from Lewis Ferguson in that.
Yeah.
And Napoli, who, look like Napoli again. They had Kvara back and he looked like Kvara. And they're sort of in that mix as well. What did you make of all of that, James?
Well, I think, you know, Napoli, are they back? I'm not so sure. I mean, Kvara scored a wonderful goal, the sort of goal that he scored regularly last season. I think they're still glitchy, Napoli. And they just, you know, I say this with all due respect for the fan base, but I think they act as a small club. You know, I mean, the way De Laurentiis decides to just give press conferences, not to undermine the coach, but I just think just get on with it. Talk less, play more. Bologna, fantastic from them, you know, after going to San Siro and coming away with a point and playing really well, to come back in this game in the way they did against Sassuolo really showed that they've got great team spirit. They really believe in what their manager asks of them. Xerxes, again, just sort of playmaking as a number nine. You mentioned the Ferguson goal as well. So, yeah, they are not going away from the Champions League race, which is still a surprise. They signed a player from Racing in Argentina over the winter break, Castro, who's a striker who might replace Xerxes if Xerxes leaves in the summer. There's a lot of attention around him. And there's also a lot of hype around this kid, Castro. And then Roma. Roma, I think Daniele De Rossi has become the first Roma coach since Herbert Burgess, 95 years ago, to win his first three games as a Roma coach. They have come against soft opponents. And yeah, Cagliari on Monday night, Claudio Ranieri back in Rome, you know, one of Rome's favourite sons, lovely banner for the fans in honour of him. And I think Roma, because they scored early from a set play, you know, they gained in confidence. But you just see, this team feels liberated and they can play football despite what Jose Mourinho said. Yeah, they've moved to a back four. Some really nice sort of use of sort of Dybala off Lukaku. The strikers are closer to goal than they were when they were playing under Jose. Cristante as well. Also the player they signed on loan from Leipzig by way of Angelino. Yeah, first Roma fullback who can cross a ball in God knows how long. So that was exciting. There's this backstory which was going around Rome this week about how when Jose was sacked, the ring that the players had given him after winning the Conference League final, he'd taken it off and he'd put it in the captain's locker, Lorenzo Pellegrini, allegedly saying, like, you know, when you guys become men, you can give it back to me.
Really?
But this story has been denied by the captain, Pellegrini. Okay. I think it's been denied by... But it certainly did the rounds in Rome.
If he was a man, he wouldn't deny it.
This ring. But, yeah, De Rossi has come in. And one of the features of Jose's Roma was... and we saw this particularly in the Europa League final, how aggressive they were, how any kind of 50-50 challenge or any 50-50 call, they would protest, they'd get booked. The coaching staff would run off the bench and that sort of thing. With De Rossi, nothing. Just like, you know, they don't do any of this, any hijinks. They just focus on playing football. Mm. And it turns out they're actually quite good at it.
When they're playing three teams out of the bottom four.
Yes.
Next weekend's going to be quite the test as they visit Inter at San Siro.
Nerazzurri, yeah. Where, again, Jose, you know, oversaw a win on one of the few occasions when he wasn't suspended.
It's at the Stadio Olimpico.
It's at the Olimpico, yeah. Okay. But, De Rossi has thrust this team into the conversation for top four, which is really important for Roma's owners. You know, they've not been in the Champions League for like 5 years now, Roma, when they used to be very regularly in it under the previous owner, Palotta. But Atalanta playing really well as well. Four straight wins in all competitions. They have a game in hand as well, which comes against Inter, which, you know, for all people are saying, sort of Inter are very close now to winning the league, even though there's 16 games to go, because they've got a four-point gap. They've got the edge of head-to-head on Juventus. But they have to win this game in hand against Atalanta, which will not be easy. Because Atalanta, even though they've been without Ademola Lookman, who's still involved in the African Cup of Nations and doing very well, they haven't missed him, partly because Charles de Ketelaere has played very well. And it's going to be interesting to see what Atalanta do with de Ketelaere between, well, not between now and the end of the season, but let's say in the summer, because he's on loan from AC Milan, but Atalanta have an option. They could take the option, let's say if he plays really well for Belgium at the Euros, and then flip him for a profit quite easily, because the Ketelaere at the moment is playing extremely well. So, yeah, it's a very exciting top four race in Italia.
In Italia. Indeed so. Quite exciting, the top four race in Spain as well. Alvaro, let's touch on that a bit more next. Okay, so race for top four in La Liga. You got Barcelona third on 50 points, Atletico Madrid fourth on 48, and then Athletic on 45 points after their massive 4-0 win last Friday against Mallorca. Atletico, as we've heard, only getting the point from the meeting with Real Madrid. Barcelona, meanwhile, got their second straight win after Xavi announced the decision. They were 3-1 winners away at Alaves, with Victor Roque scoring for the second game in a row and then getting sent off. This was another controversial bit of refereeing.
Yeah, the two yellows were harsh, the second one especially. I think it was Victor Roque, ironically, was a victim of not being shown a red card. Because if you are shown a red card, yes, that can be reviewed in the VAR room. But he was shown two yellows and therefore he couldn't finish the game. But, you know, Otigrinho is scoring goals as well. He needed that because, for example, he looked a little bit weird when he didn't play a single minute at San Mamés in the Spanish Cup. Because he is one of the winter signings. Barcelona needed a goal and Tigrinho didn't make it in that game, didn't play a single minute. But now, little by little, he's catching up. Obviously, there is an adaptation process. And, you know, he looks like at least a player who is up for the challenge and physically very strong and very fast.
Did Barcelona look better, do you think?
You could see glimpses of things that can happen when good players associate on the pitch together. Like, for example, Gundogan and Pedri in one of the goals that Barcelona scored, with Pedri sending a beautiful pass for Gundogan and Gundogan just volleying the ball into the net from an acute angle. It was also good to see Lewandowski scoring because he's been going through a very big drought, a scoring drought. You know, it wasn't one of those performances that will be a catalyzer for Barcelona, but it was clearly one that they needed because Athletic Club Bilbao is pushing very hard for the fourth spot, and Barcelona obviously needs to secure Champions League football for the next year. One tactical switch that I think that was interesting for this game, it was the fact that Christensen played as a holding midfielder.
Okay.
We know Christensen as a centre-back. We didn't know that version of this player. I think that the rationale behind that is that Xavi wants to armour plate the midfield a little bit more. Let's don't forget that Gavi is no longer playing this season because he picked a very nasty injury playing for Spain. And the next last season, Barcelona played with four midfielders, and that was one of the secrets of Barcelona. This season, since Gavi's injury, Barcelona has been playing with three midfielders and has been very exposed, especially because Busquets is no longer there. So with Christensen playing there, which I want to see whether he will play there against the likes of Napoli, Gundogan, De Jong and Pedri, Barcelona at least has a proper wall in midfield just to be defended a little bit better.
Very Mourinho-esque move this from Xavi. You know, like, I mean, remember the Clásicos of the Madrid, Barca, Pep, Jose, Messi, Ronaldo era where Jose would put Pep on Messi. He put Pep in midfield. I know Christensen is not.
Mythical Pepe.
He's not the same kind of defender as Pepe, but still, like, to think of an ideologue, a purist like Xavi, playing a centre back in midfield is pretty stunning.
But that's pretty interesting because I wanted to follow up on what you say about Pirlo being sent to the number six position, Regista, because in Spain we have had the reverse phenomenon with a few players, and Xavi was one of them. In the 2003-2004 season, Barcelona was having a terrible season under Frank Rijkaard, and Barcelona did a move in the winter transfer that was, in a way, a turning point for what happened in the following years with Barcelona. Barcelona signed temporarily Edgar Davids, a player who didn't resemble Barcelona's style at all. And Xavi, who had been playing as a number four for 4 years because they thought that he was the new Pep Guardiola, was sent to the number six position. In Spain, we call the number six position what in England we will call the number eight, maybe. And Xavi started playing a little bit more forward, 20 meters, you know, closer to the opponent's box. And that changed Xavi's career, Barcelona's next 10 years. And I think that Xavi learned that season that Barcelona, without the proper holding midfielder, was not going to be a very good team. I think that probably Xavi learned that time that his team has to play with a player who can actually stop the opponent as well. And Christensen can be that player, at least temporarily. Maybe we're talking about the next Edgar Davids or the new Edgar Davids, yeah. But 15 years later. It's too early to say, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't be surprised if Christensen plays more football in this position from now on.
Okay. Well, a great run of results for Barcelona. We talked about how disastrous it would be if they were to miss out on top four last weekend, but this week's gone well for them. Athletic Bilbao, though, they're not going away in that top four race.
I don't think so, because they are not playing in Europe. Of course, they are involved in cup games, and this midweek they are going to play against Atletico de Madrid. In fact, there has been a little bit of a controversy, a small one actually, between Athletic Club Bilbao and Atletico de Madrid. Number one, because Atletico feels that the cup games should have been played on Thursday, because Athletic Club Bilbao will have two more days to rest than Atletico de Madrid. Athletic played on Friday, Atletico played on Sunday late evening, and also because Simeone called Athletic de Bilbao El Bilbao, and this is something that in Spain
you don't do.
It's very common. Ah. But people from Bilbao, us, we hate when we got called El Bilbao, and even the president of Athletic Club Bilbao, John Uriarte, who never speaks to media really, had to speak about this subject.
Really?
But he said in a way that. He was fine with that, but you know, some part of the fan base didn't like that Simeone called Athletic El Bilbao.
I'm so glad Jules isn't here, because Jules from now on would just be going, Alvaro, El Bilbao.
What about Bilbao? Is that bad as well?
In Spain, they call us, especially in the southern part of the country and from Madrid to the south, El Bilbao, roughly. But when I moved in the UK, I was very surprised that here broadcasters called Athletic de Bilbao, Bilbao.
Okay.
I think that in Bilbao we call it El Athletic, because for us, El Athletic is us. Atletico de Madrid is a team that, you know, was created by us, from some students from Bilbao, living in Madrid in the 19th century.
At least they don't call you like AB or something like that. That's with like,
that,
you know,
that would be
AC Milan. Yeah,
it's the like, game is Wednesday night at the Civitas Metropolitana. Yes. Did you not give Atletico a bit of a schooling last time you played them?
Yes, it was at home.
El Madrid.
it was at home again. El Madrid suffered against El Bilbao. Yes.
Right, okay.
Yeah, but Nico Williams and Iñaki Williams may not feature in this game. And
why?
This is Nico picked a muscular injury, same thing for Iñaki. Uh-huh. I think that Iñaki will be ready to play, but Nico didn't train on Monday, so we have to wait and see.
Oh, wow. It's the first leg of two semifinals, the other semifinal being
Mallorca Real Sociedad.
Álvaro, did you ever used to play Pro Evolution Soccer?
Yes.
When they didn't have the naming rights, so licensing for the teams.
Yeah, and London FC and all this.
So Real Madrid would be Chamartín or something like that. What was Athletic Club de Bilbao? Do you remember?
No, I don't remember. I don't remember that one. But it must have been El Bilbao. It's very, very likely that it was
Basque
El Bilbao.
Basque FC.
Something like that. Yeah.
Asking the key questions today, James.
Well, that's what I'm here for.
No investigative journalism.
No answers.
No answers forthcoming.
No. Alrighty. Very nice, Alvaro. Anything else?
Yes, very quickly on Lucas Ocampos.
Of course.
Yeah. Lucas Ocampos, he was going to take a throw at Vallecas, Rayo Vallecano's ground, and one of the fans, a teenager, by the way, all the cameras spotted him, put his finger or tried to poke his finger in Lucas Ocampos' bum, you know, and he did it, and Lucas Ocampos didn't overreact, because after the game he said that he didn't want his daughters especially to see him overreacting on a football pitch, but he said that he felt like punching the guy. And that happened yesterday, and of course it attacked the integrity of another person. So it was, you know, maybe something that at the time looked anecdotal, but at the same time something that a fan cannot do. Basically, he was touching the parts of a footballer.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Next up, we'll conclude today's Totally Football Show with Ligue 1 and the big Mbappe news.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Time now for much missed Julien Laurens. Hello, Jules.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hello. Hey, Jules, first off, have you got a moment of the week for us?
I mean, the moment of the week came on Sunday night. It was the Olympico, you know, the Olympique Lyonnais against Olympique de Marseille. It's a game, if you remember, this season that has been full of controversy. The reverse fixture, the Lyon bus was attacked by some Marseille fans. By the way, nobody has been arrested or charged in that story. Then after that, that game was eventually played. Marseille won 3-0. So this was a big game for Lyon to kind of get revenge, really. Although the manager is different, he's not Fabio Grosso anymore. It's Pierre Sage, who lost the 3-0 game, by the way, back in December. And I think this time Lyon played really well. Like KZ scored.
Il y a un décalage à droite. Il y a un décalage avec Nuama. Allez, Ernest Nuama, le centre. Oui! Oui! KZ!
We saw a very good debut for Gift Orban in the league, the former game player that they signed in January. It was all very good from Lyon and very disappointing, I thought, from Gattuso and Marseille, who are eighth in the table. They still haven't won in 2024. And there's big crisis meetings going on in Marseille between the fans, within the club. Gattuso, Pablo Longoria, the president, who's under lots of pressure. So things are not really good for Marseille at the time.
Absolutely. Lyon, meantime, were actually Europe's top spenders in January in their efforts to beat the drop zone in Ligue 1.
Yeah, I think 56 million euros all in all they spent. Some very young, exciting players like Malik Fofana, who came from Ghent, Gift Orban came from Ghent, Nemanja Matic, who we know well from the Premier League, who came from Rennes, where he was not happy. We told that story before. So a bit of experience, some youth, John Textor. To be fair to John Textor, we've been quite critical and we called him a clown when he deserved it. But to be fair, how do you say in English? You put your money where your mouth is, because he said that he would strengthen the squad. And to be fair to him, like you said, he spent the most money in Europe to do that.
For now, Lyon 3 points clear of the bottom three. Up at the other end, PSG have extended their lead at the top again to 8 points, because while the two teams below them, Nice and Brest, had a goalless draw, Paris Saint-Germain were 2-1 winners against Patrick Vieira's Strasbourg. A game reaction to which has been pretty much dominated, Jules, by word that Kylian Mbappe has decided to join Real Madrid come the summer. Is it official yet? And does he mean it this time?
No, it's not official, James. But he has decided to leave PSG and to join Real Madrid. He still needs a full agreement, of course, with Real Madrid. But again, I don't think that deal could fall through. There will be some key points, like the image right, of course, where Mbappe, I think, wants a lot of his own image right, where usually, historically, Real Madrid don't give that away much to players. The other one is the Olympic Games in Paris that Mbappe would really love to take part of. And obviously that comes at a moment. It's not a FIFA date to start with. It's at the end of July, start of August. So when usually you're preparing for the season, maybe on tour, having some lucrative friendlies. So there's a lot of things to still be discussed between Mbappe and Real Madrid. But really, he's made his mind up now. It's a shame for PSG. He will leave as a free agent, but as we've said before, he's waving off a lot of bonuses, around 80 million euros. So he won't feel to PSG like he's living on a free. But yeah, it's the end of his PSG chapter.
If he is genuinely going this time, Jules, any word on who they'll be targeting to replace him?
I mean, I think the good thing about this whole story, Jimbo, this time compared to 2 years ago and the previous saga, is that, I mean, PSG, and it's a no-brainer, but had a plan with Mbappe and a plan without Mbappe. And now they will activate the plan without Mbappe. And in that plan, you hear a lot about Rafael Leao, who I think Luis Campos especially, who brought him from Sporting to Lille before he went to Milan, is a huge fan. You hear a lot about Victor Osimhen, although PSG already have two number nines in Gonzalo Ramos and Randal Colomwani. But you know that they will have to go for a marquee signing for sure, like the biggest name they can get, whether it's trying Leao, trying Haaland, trying, you know, Vinicius Junior, I don't know, whoever. But you know that for Haaland and Vinicius, it's not possible. However, there's probably an opening already for Rafael Leao or Victor Osimhen.
Jules, PSG's win this last Friday night against Strasbourg, 2-1, saw a lot of unhappiness from these Strasbourg supporters about their own management, about Todd Boehly and the way that Blüko are running the club, sparked particularly by the decision right at the end of the transfer window to sell their goalkeeper, Mats Selles.
Yeah, a lot of really unhappy Strasbourg fans, especially the ultras. It's not the first time, but maybe I guess because this time the game was Friday night, it was on prime television in France, in the UK, a bit everywhere. I think they knew that it was the right time to have maybe an even bigger protest than usually, because every home game, to be fair, they're protesting against Blüko and Todd Boehly. They feel, and I think we said that when the Strasbourg was announced, Strasbourg fans feel they're too big of a club to be part of this kind of multi-club ownership. They are too big to be a feeder club, like you're saying, for a club like Chelsea. They don't like the fact that even if Chelsea and Blüko provided money for them, so they spent actually quite decent money in the summer, that it was just to clearly, you know, bring players into Strasbourg to make them ready for then at some point going to Chelsea. And they don't want to do that. We saw that with Troyes and what's happening with Savio, for example, from Girona and Manchester City, which Strasbourg fans don't want to happen to their club. So I can understand the position. But they also know that nothing is going to change, unfortunately for them. But yeah, the protest was quite vocal, let's put it that way, with a lot of banners as well against Todd Boehly and Blüko and Chelsea and all of that. And they played well. They didn't deserve to lose 2-1. PSG were not very good at all. But in the end, I think he showed the lack of maybe efficiency that Strasbourg have currently under Patrick Vieira.
Okay, the man who replaced goalkeeper Mats Selles had a busy time of it, saving Mbappe's penalty early on, but then giving the ball away in pretty disastrous fashion for Mbappe's opener about half hour in.
Yeah, you felt for him a little bit because although he's not that so young anymore, he's 22, he's been clearly waiting for that opportunity. Mats Selles was a very good keeper for Strasbourg. I think he's going to be very good for Forest as well if he plays there. And your first game is against PSG again, primetime television, Friday night, at La Meno Stadium, rocking, great atmosphere. And you save the pen, and then you make that mistake, really, that, you know, he needs to learn from it. He's a very young goalkeeper in sense of experience. But yeah, it was a bit of a shocking. He did okay and certainly saved the pen. But after that, it was far more difficult. Just one more thing, Jimbo, quickly.
Yeah.
We saw Monaco being at home and only drawing 1-1 against Le Havre. But the big story in that game was not so much the result, although that put more pressure on Adi Hütter, is the fact that Takumi Minamino, the Japanese international forwards, played his second game in just 24 hours because he played on Friday with Japan in the Asian Cup when they lost their game against Iran. He came on for the last 20 minutes, then flew over 5,000 kilometers, 7 hours from Qatar back to Monaco. He wanted to be in the Monaco squad for the game against Le Havre. Ended up coming on for the last 20 minutes. So it was Saturday and Sunday. Coming on for 20 minutes on Sunday because Monaco needed a goal after being 1-1. So I believe he's the first player ever to play two games in 24 hours over two continents.
Over two continents? Yeah. Remarkable
in Qatar
stuff.
And in Europe. So Asia and Europe.
Involved in more projects simultaneously than even you, Jules. Incredible. Yeah,
exactly. My boy, Minamino.
Excellent. Julien Laurent's there. And, well, we'll hear from him again next Monday as we head into the last 16 of the Champions League and the last 75 or whatever it is of the Europa League and Conference League. Got a big playoff.
Last 75.
next Thursday. Oof. All right. Lots to talk about next time around. Of course, there'll be all those big, big games. In Germany.
I'll be there.
Yeah.
I'm going.
Are you going along?
Yeah.
All right, Raf.
I'd never pass up the opportunity to go to Leverkusen for a day trip.
Yes?
Yeah.
Is there a particular reason for that?
It's a wonderful place, James.
Okay.
That should be on your bucket list.
Okay.
Big Pharma Town.
Big Pharma Town, yeah. Very nice. Good.
Are we watching Leverkusen's attempt to turn the Bundesliga into a farmer league, James?
Right. Well, will they succeed or will they have a bitter pill to swallow, etc.? Mm. And so on. Will they get by on a headache? All that.
Yep.
Good. All right. thanks, Raf. Cheers, James Horncastle. Thank you so much, Alvaro. Thank you to Liam and Charlie in the booth. And you, listener, we're back on Thursday with a regular Totally Football show. So do join us for that. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.